Hi, this is comedian Liz Blanc, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment.
To the default setting, where we find out what makes you tick, because we have ways of making you talk. I am your host, Jess Falstick.
And I am co-host Gigi Chick.
Today we have comedian, host of the, is it the Garage Bar Showcase? What do you call your show?
I just call it what it is. If it's the open mic, it's just the open mic at Garage Bar.
All right.
I put on an occasional monthly showcase, and we just call it the Showcase at Garage Bar. Yeah.
So, comedian who keeps it simple, Mr. Gary Graham, how are you?
Good, yourself?
Very good.
Thanks for
glad
coming.
To have you here today. Yep. Your default setting is chaos.
Chaos.
Ah, this is fun.
Yes.
Where do you want to begin with this one?
Chaos.
Like to talk
just,
about.
You can begin anywhere. It's
well,
just
like where does chaos originate as far as this being your default setting?
Just it kind of turned into the theme of my life. Just in general. After a while, you realize that you know nothing's ever going to be normal. And just get in the flow with it, and it's kind of a running joke. My friends and family, like, what's going to happen next?
Okay.
So, yeah.
When was the first chaotic thing that happened to you?
Oh, geez. Just childhood in general. I had a really good life until my parents got divorced, which you probably wouldn't believe that since you started with stand-up comic.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad bounced, and then 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade, I started a different school every year.
Wow.
Different states, moved around a lot.
With your mom?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it's kind of from on to there, just onto adulthood and that.
Okay, so the chaos sort of started with just sort of the instability of being in one place at a time.
Yeah, and then that's where I got used to the chaos. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize at the time, you learn that as an adult, like, oh, that's where it stems from. As far as the last few years, about 10 years ago, I was in the Marines, and I went to Iraq and learned that you don't get to control much of anything.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, well, when I come home, you know, I'll be a regular person, we'll get a job, and we'll work normal, and just be a regular red-blooded American. Mm-hmm. And then I got out in October 2008,
okay.
And I don't know if you guys know much about the economy at the time.
It was the worst. That was when it crashed. Yeah, because I got married 2 months later, and that was the worst.
It was great,
time.
And I was like, I'm a veteran, I'm a hard worker, I'm going to get a job. And there weren't any. And so then I bounced around for almost 2.5-3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've been married this whole time, so it's kind of like two of us, and I had to support someone as well, and you know, from my childhood now, that kind of meant something.
Yeah.
And so after 2 years of unemployment, I finally get a temp job.
Okay.
Finally get a job. About 6 months on the job, find out I'm going to have a son.
Mm.
Yeah, we're looking up, right?
Yeah.
About 30 days after I found out I was having a son, I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Yeah. So there in sheer chaos, just the up and down roller coaster of, wow, we spent so long in the bottom, and then we're finally making it again, and then thunder crash and down. And it was really during that time of, I went through 6 months of chemotherapy.
Okay.
Basically, every 10 days, they poison you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as soon as you could walk again, and you feel good, you eat a sandwich, they take you back in. Yeah, they put more in. And well, you really learn to roll with the punches, and I spent 6 months laying there kind of going, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening? How do you control life? How do I move on from here and somehow fix what was wrong? And kind of after laying there, I realized that you don't fix it. You just, I have an image, kind of like a 3D pinball machine, and you could fight life, and you could like try to hold on to the bumpers or tilt the machine or something, mm-hmm. but my kind of idea is I just become the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I jump up, grab my legs, and just bounce situation to situation. And
and
as long as you're aware that it's going to change real soon, and you bounce between the hard places and have fun in the middle when the lights and sounds are going off. And,
I like that metaphor a lot.
Yeah.
So when you were in the Marines, was that something you just decided to get into, or was it to pay for school, or what was it?
It was actually a long-rooted thing. I read the book, The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane. Mm-hmm. I read it in third grade, which now maybe a little young, but I was happy because I read a chapter book.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about a soldier in the Civil War that grows up fantasizing about going to war, like the big Greek and Roman battles amongst men and just testing yourself and your honor and your strength and courage. And, you know, wondering if one day he could do that himself. And then the Civil War comes along and he's working on a farm with his mom and he finally enlists, not to for any ideological reasons, just to see if he can. And that story kind of stuck with me. So I joined the Marines after 9/11, not for anything real important, just kind of to see if I could.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're going over. So I got with the best team, the hardest fighters there were. I'm like, let's go max route. And ended up driving a fuel truck.
Okay.
Yeah. They put me in a gas
that's
truck.
Super dangerous, right?
Yes and
that's
no.
That's what they want to shoot at to make the most impact.
It was definitely the worst. I was a target for 6 months, and we're part of NATO. Okay. I'm not sure for how much longer that's going to last.
Sure.
So, chaos.
By the time this airs, Lord knows what will be going on.
Chaos will ensue. That's actually been great. Chaos, I mean, to depart from sort of my story in the military to where we are now, when we're talking about this, the president just went and brought peace to the Korean Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And Dennis Rodman is now a Benjamin Franklin level ambassador
complete
for the United
with the syphilis.
States.
Yeah.
Like
complete with
Ben
the
Franklin,
the
he got the French to come help America because he went and partied in the brothels with the bourgeois.
Yeah.
We sent our biggest partier to the worst country in the world. And now he's like, all right, man, let's figure this out.
So $100 bill, Dennis Rodman, in about 50 years.
Yeah.
It'll be all about the Dennises.
Or no. And this whole chaotic thing
all
will
about
fall
the
apart. And yeah,
we'll
nothing
all
will
die.
Yeah.
How long were you stationed in Iraq?
7 months.
Oh, okay. So not a lot of time, but.
No, it was a one tour. I got injured before I went over. I ran into a soccer net.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I had a hyperextension, compression, slip disc, and bruised bone from a game of flag football.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
See, this is like chaos just follows.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, every story has
you're
another.
You're like Kenny from South Park. Like,
yeah, that's
the
it.
The fucking mirror's going to just drop out of the sky and, like, crush you.
That's
like.
It. I actually had someone describe me as the luckiest in the worst way.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm very lucky once you get over the fact of how lucky unlucky it was.
Yeah, defying the odds sort of thing. Okay, so you went into Iraq already injured.
Yeah, and they told me it was either do rehab and possibly miss my deployment, which in 2006 when I actually made it over, I thought the war was going to be over soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, silly me. And so I decided to take a tour and say that I was okay and go over. But other than that, it was fine. So I was on the first bus out. They kind of knew who I was. And,
okay. You weren't one of those that just decided you want to go back and do multiple tours like you were done after one tour.
I definitely tried.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you realize this is my excuses, how I'm going to rationalize it and sound like a better guy than the crybaby I was 10 years ago. But when you join the Marine Corps and you are amongst the best of the best, if it's something that's just a week back, if you can't honestly tell yourself that you'll save your brother in arms if the worst happens, you're then cheating them, not yourself.
Sure.
So I was disappointed. I was mad, and I drove a truck. I didn't need to carry anything. Right. I can still drive fast.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, when you're not 100% the best human being in the world, you're really not needed in America's greatest fighting force is...
I feel
all
like,
right as that just sounded.
I mean, when you think of that, it almost kind of seems ironic considering like you were putting yourself in sort of the most potentially chaotic situations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In harm's way. And I mean, did you really experience anything terribly?
Yeah, like, I could say that I never had to shoot anyone.
Okay.
Which is the one question I always get, did you kill anyone? I will answer that, no. As far as day-to-day over there, it was the height of the war.
Mm-hmm.
I was there pre-surge, which is when things got so bad they had to send extra troops over to retake the country.
Okay.
Few of the deadliest months in Iraq, I was there.
Wow.
So I was seeing it. But then again, being lucky in all the right kind of ways, I was kind of always just one step away. You never wanted to be where I just was.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you saw you leave an area, you just go the opposite direction. Yeah, because yeah, there's probably a landmine like 5 inches
away. Yeah, my I actually have my unit photograph that my squad took over there. We took it on top of the sign that we made that marked our kind of base and our shop. And that area that we were in 2 weeks after I left is completely destroyed by mortar fire.
Wow.
That they had been trying to bring in the entire time we were there. So
that's bananas.
Well, I was fine.
Yeah, I mean, true.
It's crazy.
So you said when you got back from your tour, it was, you said 2008?
Well, yeah, I got home. I got out of the Marines in 2008.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. When I got home, that was, then I kind of turned into full stereotype. I'm home from war Marine, partying too much, drinking too much. It lasted like 6 months. I got caught up, with some honest Marines that really saw me going the wrong way and rescued me. It's the whole generic Hallmark story, but it went through in like 6 months. Yeah. And it's been finer since then. Yeah, PTSD is something I actually talk about it on stage, that I think it's LARPing for men.
So. Okay.
Just live action role play when you're freaking out in the backyard with your gear on.
Oh my God. Okay. So did you suffer any of that?
There was a couple instances of just general kind of freaking out.
Yeah.
Hyper awareness
is
something that's associated with it. It's not something I like to call PTSD, because I believe like if you enlist in the military with an open mind and a mindset that you know what comes of that,
mm-hmm.
You kind of know that you're going to be changed in the process. Mm-hmm. So I know they used to call it battle hardening or battle fatigue. And you know that your brain changes to a certain extent to where I embraced that kind of hyper-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds kind of dark talking about it. I like to play Jason Bourne in buildings.
Okay.
Yeah, like whenever I'm in a hospital, I like to find stairways to run up and down or like big office buildings and use your hyper-awareness, overactive PTSD brain not to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, you have some of those symptoms, if mm-hmm. I was air quoting that. But yeah, this stuff sticks with you. Just how you manage it and control it, like anything else.
Is it kind of irreversible, do you think, in a way? Like, you're just kind of always going to be in that sort of state? Where you
probably.
Yeah.
I've talked to Marines. We're a really tight community. You know, once a Marine, always a Marine. I walk into a bar now with my hat on or something, and I'll see a guy that was in World War II, and we start talking shit like we know each other our whole lives.
That's great.
So you talk to these old guys, I mean, World War II veterans, like, yeah, I still wake up some mornings and have a fear attack that my skivvies aren't ironed good enough for my drill instructor.
World War II veterans?
World War II veterans have boot camp fear stories.
Holy shit.
You're like, damn, those drill instructors were killing back then. But so you kind of know that, all right, if I just extrapolate that out, I'm no better or worse than any of them. So most likely, I mean, it'll be with you. But if you reach out and you get help, I don't want to say deal with it, like get over it.
Mm. But just face it and recognize it at least.
Learn how to incorporate in your daily life.
Do you think it has impacted any of your relationships, your marriage, anything else?
Oh, yeah, by my complete lack of relationships.
Okay, got it.
I jokingly say I don't have any friends, but that's only kind of a half-truth. I'm really, like, standoffish. Trust issues are a major thing with me, both from the chaos of childhood and everything I've gone through. You see people come in and out of your life, and when things get hard, not that it's really any fault of their own. I've kind of learned to accept that people kind of back off when things get hard, but mm-hmm. it's hard for someone. When I did have cancer, I had a lot of friends that were, oh, sucks, man, we're here for you. But at the same time, they don't want to deal with the bald-headed freak that's sick all the time and skinny and... And I say that in a joking fan. I don't want to bring the mood down, but you realize, you know, you look like death. And when you stare at your healthy friend at a barbecue, they go, oh, shit, I'm having a beer. What if I get
that
too?
Feel like buzzkill.
And so you realize after several of these major life-changing events that, oh, you're going to lose a certain percentage. And I don't fault them. Because what do you say to someone that you drink with that's now like going through a life-changing battle, you know?
Mm.
But at the same time, I have carried that with me of why do I really need to invest myself making non-lifelong friends when they'll probably just not bounce because of the anger, but, you know, just sort of fade the next time something happens. Because I fully anticipated coming back. So.
Yeah. Right, so you're kind of just anticipating that your life's going to continue with this pattern. So you're like, well, why bother putting different people through this kind of
when
situation?
You say it back. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the rationale I could tell myself, that, you know, I'm doing it to help them, not because I'm not worth it.
Right.
But
that makes sense.
Yeah, deep.
What's that?
Like a deep.
A deep?
Got oh, deep. It's gotten,
oh, deep. Oh, it always
it's gotten
deep. Yeah.
It's gotten super dark.
Oh, yeah, it gets dark.
That
it's
was
deep.
Uplifting compared to...
Yeah, this is good. Yeah, no, this is very good. So when you got back, were you married before you left, or did you meet your wife when you came home, or...
Yeah, actually, I married my high school sweetheart.
Okay.
We were infatuated with each other after high school, but we both had rough childhoods, and if I got married, I could live off base and get an extra paycheck, and she was type 1 diabetic.
Oh, wow.
And needed health care. So I'm like, let's get hitched. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally how I slid a ring across the table and go, let's get hitched. And we kind of did it, and it was going to be our experimental marriage, and over 13 years later, I just haven't met another one that takes me away, and she's been cheaper than home health care, and yeah.
That's
so.
So has that been pretty like stable, all things considered? When you
unfortunately, mentioned? Yeah.
Unfortunately,
yeah. I'm going to get a girlfriend soon, one day.
Wait,
it's going
what?
To happen. But I'm not good at talking to people, and I can't like. The
so
last,
wait, are you guys in an open marriage?
I say yes. Like,
it's one-sided open.
No, well, she. She is an awesome, amazing woman, and she holds down a career, takes care of our two kids, but she can get hammered and switch sides.
Okay.
And be very enthusiastic about the unmarried lifestyle.
Okay.
Is that a... She likes making out with chicks and getting crazy
sure.
at parties.
That's a lot of women, though. Okay. Don't fall for
I mean,
for
my right. I'm in a long-term relationship, and I'm allowed to sleep with women.
It's totally sweet. All
yeah.
right.
So, and that's... I tell that joke a lot. Like, I'm allowed to sleep
I feel
with
like
women.
That's all such right. a natural thing. Like, it's not even a, like, oh, I'm not happy with this guy. I'm going to make out with women. It's just, like, such a natural thing for women
no,
to
yeah.
do.
No, yeah. And she is... She
like, almost doesn't have anything to do with...
And she's always been far more sexual than me. I mean, okay. I'm kind of a... I'd rather read a book and talk to someone about the theory of sex.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
If you want to talk about sex at dawn all night, I'll yeah. discuss it.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't ever have to actually, like, enter coitus.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, she's kind of said, like, oh, you know, we've been faithful all this time, and we've pretty much done everything in life except other people.
Yeah.
So...
she got married right out of high school. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And now she's like, oh, you're doing comedy. You're going to meet some girls and fans. And like, if you ever have it. And the same thing was when I was in the military. If you're off on R&R, like it's always kind of been there. And I think since.
That's healthy.
So
that's
maybe
really
maybe
healthy.
That's her being like, listen, we could both be on the same page about it. I'm okay. I'm telling you, I'm okay if you wanted to experience things that I'm maybe experiencing. Like,
yeah.
Kind of thing.
And
that's better that she's at least talking about it and not
yeah.
just.
Plus, she knows that I am such an awkward nerd.
She's like, good luck.
Yeah, babe, yeah. whatever. You go for it.
Yeah, I talk a big game. I'll wear nice clothes and do my hair, and I'll flirt. But as soon as everything, like, I don't, I've met Jess, like, a dozen times now. I think, like, a high five is the most body contact.
Probably.
I don't hug. Yeah. I don't, like, I will stand 10 feet from you. And so, yes, but no.
That's cool, though. I mean, and honestly, again, I think that in some ways it's sort of ironic that, like, most people don't have that sort of open communication or that understanding or that level that sort of, I think, leads to a form of stability of just being able to be like, look, we're human.
Well,
and if that works for you guys,
yeah.
like,
yeah,
and it's an open, like, communication.
And I'm very, like, the idea of marriage is just a social construct between people that made shit up from men that made farms and wanted to
yeah.
keep property there.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand that. And
it's all about like ownership, really. Yeah. yeah.
It's all about ownership. It's tax benefits. It's money. It's a corporation. I'm pretty open about the fact that I got married because of the financial
yeah.
benefits and everything. Yeah, it's
right.
really, it's actually kind of funny. I heard a lesbian friend of mine complaining now. I don't know if you can say I didn't, anyways. White guy
no, that's,
stumbling
that's not
over. Okay, sorry, white guy stumbling here. Sorry.
Continue.
And complaining about a tax check, like having to pay taxes this year when a guy she works with got money back and they know they make the same thing. And I had to explain, he's married, he has kids. Yeah. That's what you were fighting for. Mm-hmm. You could be in love and a partner with someone forever and right. share a relationship. You were fighting for the corporate merger aspect yep. of it. I mean, you can love someone forever. You were fighting to sign a will. You were fighting for access to a hospital room. Yep. You were fighting for inheritance. Mm-hmm. You weren't fighting for love.
Right.
So
and you're absolutely 100% right.
Yeah.
Completely.
So now it's... get married.
Yeah. Go get married if that's what you want. Yeah.
Find a chick. Stop your bitching. And you don't even have to
love her.
No, just be friends. Just be you and I, we're roommates. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I think that's a great point just from the perspective of I was married and I'm madly in love with my boyfriend. And we talk about getting married just because we're so in love. It's well, what the fuck else should we do? Because we're just so in love. We feel like there's something else that mm-hmm. needs to happen. But at the same time, the idea of marriage, I hate contracts and all the legal bullshit and just everything that has to be undone if it doesn't work out again.
It back to the topic, love is chaos. Romance is chaos. I mean, just the emotions you could feel day to day. The more you love someone, the madder you could get at them.
Oh, yeah.
And, it does. If someone cuts you off in traffic, hey, fuck you, but you don't care.
And it's over, yeah.
Yeah, but let your husband or boyfriend just look at you wrong. That's 4 days of anger. Only because you care so much that you can now harbor that much anger. Right. And
to whatever highest degree your love can be for someone, it can swing the complete opposite direction.
Yes.
That exact
thin
same
line
level.
Between love and hate.
Because it's an exact balance. You could get real crazy.
And that's the chaos of that relationship. And when you know that, okay, well, what if I look at her wrong today and she leaves me? Well, that signature, that contract is now a form of trying to control the chaos.
Sure.
Which is what a lot of people try to do. I've actually had the last 3 months, I've been freaking out. This summer, my child had a brain tumor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Sorry. Last year, I started comedy, and I made the comment, I don't think I could do this anymore because my life is so good. I had managed to, from all the previous stuff, work myself up. I bought a home. I had 2 kids. I actually had a savings account for the first time in my life, and I made the comment, I don't think I could tell jokes. My life is too good. A month later, my son started getting headaches and getting sick. I kind of make the joke that we thought he was going retarded.
Oh, my God.
That we thought, that's the joke I make, but we were worried that something was wrong with, autism or just something mentally going wrong with him. We tested him for everything all summer, even allergies and glasses. What is wrong with his brain? Turns out it was a kiwi-sized tumor on top of his brain stem that was causing swelling in his brain.
Oh, my God.
He turned 6. On a Saturday, started his first day of kindergarten on a Monday, and that was the highest part of my entire life. By Tuesday, he was in the emergency room for the brain tumor, and Wednesday, he was at the Cleveland Clinic getting it removed.
Wow.
So we never even had time to, deal with it.
Yeah.
But, so then the last 3 months or so, I've been kind of dealing with, I thought I had a grip on life, and the chaos was over. And then it was the lowest sucker punch, the hardest pinball bounce I had taken my entire life. And I've spent the last 3 months angry, like that hungry kid that can't figure out what's wrong and just angry at everything. And I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, just the fact that it's another element of chaos that as soon as things settle down, everything goes
to
shit.
Controlling it. Yeah, I thought I had it under control and I realized that I wasn't in control and it spiraled me into this just anger manifest. If you've seen my comedy in the last couple months, you may have recognized it.
Especially because you love him so much. It's like,
yes.
Okay, now I'm reacting to this.
And I had spent years, this story gets so long.
No, it's fine.
Up until then, my daughter was born 4 years before that. And a week before she was born, I wrecked a motorcycle.
Oh my God.
I had never ridden one before. And a guy asked if I wanted to ride. And I go, yeah, because when my daughter's born, I can't be making stupid mistakes anymore. This is when I was still living wild and post-cancer. I'll never die. I'm awesome. Post-war. And so I wrecked a motorcycle as fast as it can go. I shattered my left side. I broke the helmet. I had brain swelling. I was life-flighted. It was really terrible. And when I woke up from that and my left arm wouldn't work. I couldn't hold my daughter when she was born. I kind of felt like I had failed the one person that meant something.
Oh.
And I took a vow of like peace and serenity. I got really into meditation, yoga, like healthy eating and all of that, positive vibes, no negativity. I wouldn't say a coarse word to something, because I believe that if I said one negative word to you, it would come back tenfold to me. And I had nothing but history to prove it.
Yeah.
So I had spent 4 years just total whack job, peace, let's meditate. Like
total Yoda.
Yeah, real bad. Yeah, real bad.
Full Yoda, yeah.
And actually the metaphor I used, because Yoda was also a warrior and knew that the Force could fight light and dark, but also peace was the way to it. Nailed it.
Way to go, Jude.
Thank you. And so I had spent 4 years believing that I had overcome everything because I had finally found peace and I was meditating. I was putting it into the universe. And then when the tumor happened, it plunged me so far from literally the highest of highs. People were jealous. I'm not in the hater form, but like, people would look at my life and be jealous of the lifestyle that I had, even knowing my history.
Yeah.
Like, my life was so well, was so good. And then I was just dropped. And now, kind of the opposite of that, the last few months, now bill collectors are wondering where the money's at and all that. And then you're in anger. And
jeez.
So, but now the last couple months, I really found out, you know, it takes the light and the dark to balance the chaos. And that's when you just hold your legs and let them bounce you around the trampoline for a while. And so
that is, that's the thing that I kind of think about a lot, is the idea that like you need both to have perspective, sort of thing. Cause if when things are always good, or when things are always just like at an even keel, you start to take for granted like how good things are, how easy things are. So when things go to shit, you appreciate how much more.
That reminds me of, I also like exactly what you guys are saying. A Logic song, one of the lyrics is like, what's the day without a little night?
Mm-hmm.
I like love that lyric. It's so true.
I always think about it like in terms of like whenever I go on vacation or travel and I'm like, I'm in this beautiful place, why do I have to leave? And it's like, because if I stayed here, I would completely forget that like I live in Cleveland, Ohio, or the weather is shit, and you know, I take for granted all the things that I love about being here.
And you could stay there and then a hurricane will hit
or
a tidal wave or a volcano. That place is no better to stay.
Riots, whatever it is.
I like vacations because you get away from yourself. Actually, tomorrow I'm going camping. I go way up into the mountains where we lose cell phone service.
Where at? Nice.
The Alleghenies.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I heard those are pretty.
I said way up to sound cool, and then broader, just Pennsylvania.
No, still, that's pretty.
So I lose all cell phone service up there, and something I like to do is I don't hunt, but I like to sit there like I am.
Mm-hmm.
I sit and wait until nature forgets I'm there, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, you just sit there, you don't move, you control your breathing, sit up against a tree, and eventually nature comes back, and no one can call my cell, no one can contact me, I'm off the world's grid, and then even nature has forgotten about me, and then I'm kind of no longer there, and all of that chaos and everything is gone.
That's cool.
That's a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to snow there, and it's going to lightning storm. And, no, not this weekend.
Oh, God.
But
holy shit, how far up is it? Wow.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I'm that. Yes. I'm, yeah. I sit there and I ward off hypothermia like a man.
Just like Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining, just like frozen. So how often do you do that?
I try to do it at least quarterly, every 3 months.
Yeah.
And you're going by yourself?
No, this time I'm actually taking the family. It's Father's Day weekend as we're recording this.
Yeah.
And now that they're all old enough to get out there, I think it's important for them to be cut off from society and know that I can make them disappear as well.
I will. I will make you disappear.
This world. No, but take you out.
But it's cool. It's fun. It's showing them, you know, this. There's no sidewalks. This isn't the suburb. You don't have Nickelodeon and a tablet.
Yeah.
And although I did have to make a concession, today I went to Walmart and I bought a folding toilet seat so the girls have a place to sit.
That's nice.
Yeah, because I took them one time
last
summer.
I wish I could stand up. Yeah, that'd be way easier.
Yeah, I took them one time last summer, and for 2 days I just had two baby girls whining at me that...
Your wife and your daughter.
Yeah, yeah. Both of them. There's nowhere to pee. Like, I dug you a hole. Like, it's really a nice hole. You could hold onto the shovel, grab a tree, and squat.
Yeah, hold on.
You heard a squatty potty? They're just trying to replicate the forest floor. My son loves it. He just poops everywhere. Like, dude, you're supposed to do like
buries
wow,
it,
whatever.
Just walks away.
Oh my God. Boys. Not
like a cat.
I don't want to see you from the campfire. It's gross. But.
funny. That sounds really fun, though. And you said you do it every 3 months or so?
Yeah, every 3 months or so for myself. A few times in the summer, I normally take a couple of guys up there and have like a retreat, do drugs, hang out.
Hell yeah.
So.
Okay. So let's see. Let's review a little bit. So far, some of the crazy ass shit that has happened is you moved around a lot. You went to Iraq. You drove a fucking fuel truck where some crazy shit potentially could happen. You came back home at the stock market crashed.
Yeah.
And couldn't find a job for 2 years. Finally found a job. Had a job for, you said, what, 30 days? Six months?
Yeah. 30 days? Yeah, it was less than my 90-day review.
Yeah, and then you got Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah.
And how long did you have that?
Well, how long did I have it, or how long did I go
through
it?
How long did you have it before you when it were like in remission, or before you were like sort of given a clean bill, or how does that work? I guess I don't really.
The chemotherapy was 6 months.
Okay,
That was the full growth stuff. You lose your hair. All that. By the way, my hair grew back fantastic.
I say you have a lot of hair.
Yeah, that's why it's the weird. I always have like weird hipster haircuts because I like to grow it out and play with it because I'm fascinated with it now.
Me too. Yeah. My hair grows really quickly. Uh-huh. So I love just like that it grows out, basically just starts over every month. And then I just go in and I'm like, let's just do this.
I get nervous to cut it. I get just.
Because you think something's going to happen.
I always wanted, I'm Italian, but you can never tell. My brother and sister, dark skin, dark hair, gorgeous Italians. Me, like pasty white most of the year, just.
You have a bit of a like undertone, like I'm straight up Irish, like I have that pink white thing going on. You a darker yellow.
I'm growing into it. It's finally coming. It's now, good, I've been whining about it for over 30 years. It's like, all right, I'll give you some tone.
When did you have your first kid?
August 2011.
Okay, so it was after you had.
No, that little jerk. I had worked it out. I had worked it out with my oncologist and my wife's whatever woman doctor is called. There you go. I don't talk to women or shake hands. Why would I say
that woman doctor?
Yeah. And we had set it so that I could go in between chemo treatments and have like I would go every 14 days, and for 10 of those days I'd be bedridden, and then I'd have a couple days where I could move. So what they did is extended one session out. So I'd have an extra week of health, and we were going to try to have him there. And he came a week early right after a chemo session.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It was fine with me. I just had to lay in the room and puke. My wife had to do all the work. Mm. And then when my daughter was born 2 years later, I had just gotten out of the ICU 2 days before. So I just had to lay there
for
and not die again.
Stuff?
No, for the motorcycle accident.
Right. Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah. So actually, while we were in having my daughter, it was the same doctor. She said that when they asked, like, do you want her tubes tied or not? I was like, well, yeah, I think so. I think two's enough. She goes, I think you probably should because it's bad for your health.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I never thought of that. <way." laughs>
We have a third. There'll be a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, she's like, you need to stop having kids. You're not going to make it for the next one.
Yeah. That's a really good way to put it. Okay, so then after you had the motorcycle accident, what happened between motorcycle accident and you said your son was diagnosed with a brain tumor?
Yeah, that was a solid 4-year span.
Or nothing.
Little things.
Yeah.
Little things like my grandma passed, which she was kind of my rock. And you go, oh, well, that was the big one this year. And you're like, no, dude, she was old. And she's your grandma. And everyone has to experience your grandma's loss. But other than that, no, I had to like.
Good streak.
Yeah. It was hard work, dedication, kept my face down in the dirt, just kept grinding away. And now I had two kids. It wasn't about me. I mean, a lot of this I bring on myself. I do dumb things. I don't want to make it sound like
it's just
nature.
Yeah.
But, four pretty good years.
Yeah. And then you said, what was it, 3 weeks after you made the joke about their life's going too good? Or
probably, yeah. It was pretty close to that. It was close enough to go, wow, that was dumb to say.
So that was 3 months ago.
That was last August.
Last August?
Yes. He's now, just to fill everyone in, because when you tell someone your kid has a brain tumor, they don't listen. Like, you could tell him, oh, he started kindergarten and he had a brain tumor. And they go, oh, does he like school?
Really? That's people's reaction?
Yeah, it's really weird. Whoa. So actually, I talked about it more on stage than I have with family and friends because I realized that when you go, yeah, he started school and had a brain tumor. And they go, does he like school? You go, wow, telling someone that a child had a brain tumor doesn't register. It's so dark and hurtful. So just knowing that to the listening audience, he is okay.
Yeah.
We just last week had his 9-month brain scan.
Okay.
The doctor at Cleveland Clinic is amazed at how well he's doing. The only long-lasting effect, he'll have an empty space in his head for a while.
Okay.
His mom's had one her whole life, and she's fine.
Hey-o! So, take my wife, please!
So he's good. So any joking we do, he's now just an asshole 6-year-old like the rest of them.
That's good. That's really good. So were they pretty much able to remove the tumor with like a lot of chemo or radiation or anything?
No, it was... We didn't know he had a tumor for 24 hours.
Okay.
My wife and I, we had kind of been arguing it over it all summer. So we had done every possible test because she knew something was wrong as mom and as dad. I'm like, no, my son's just being a wuss.
Mm-hmm.
We had an argument. Another thing I said last summer is I yelled at her one time, stop being so dramatic. What do you think? It's a fucking brain tumor.
Oh, God.
So that was something I said.
Yeah.
And then that morning he got diagnosed, he told her that he couldn't see straight. He saw two of everything. Mm. So she took him to the emergency room and they did a CAT scan right there. They called me. I do have to say after that argument, my first words were, we'll get through this. We'll be okay. And I'm sorry. I was wrong. You were right.
Yeah.
So that's how you stay married for 13
for
years.
Sure.
Yeah. But that you're wrong.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
And be able to say it. Yeah.
Just, women's intuition shuts down most things.
Yeah
I was totally wrong. And to her effect as a woman, she is very down on herself that I should have done more. I should have been there. But even the doctor said by testing everything all summer, nobody goes straight for brain tumor.
Right.
And we kind of circled the drain until there was nothing left but the nuclear option. And so that was August.
Okay.
And now...
So you said they removed...
Oh, that's what I was saying, yeah. 2:30 in the afternoon, I got a call from the emergency room saying my son had a brain tumor. By 4:30, I was at the hospital getting in the ambulance to go downtown. 12:30 at night, we were in the MRI doing pre-surgery scans. 7:30 in the morning at Cleveland Clinic, we had the best brain surgeon, neurosurgeon at Cleveland Clinic. Number 2 hospital in the world, by the way.
Yeah.
Number 3 in childhood neurosurgery.
Yeah.
They cut a giant hole in the back of his head, and they just pulled the whole fucking thing out. Yeah, she said it was about the size of a kiwi.
That's what you're saying.
Plus, I try to use fruit references.
No, and it's a good visual.
People do that with babies, too.
Yeah,
they're like, it's the size of an avocado right now.
Exactly.
Oh, okay, cute.
Yeah. People try to read in those books, and I go, great, now I can't eat avocados for 6 weeks. And
it spread at all, or was it just a tumor?
No, it was, again, being lucky in the worst kind of ways of, if you want your kid to have a brain tumor, you want that fucking tumor.
Was that a benign tumor?
Yeah, it was benign. Okay. It was just a huge growing some bitch that they just had to pull out, and she cut it out. There was one spot she was worried about that doctors have to tell you that they didn't get it all because they don't want to get sued. But what I asked the doctor after the surgery was, did you have a good day at work? She kind of looked at me puzzled, and I go, yeah, if I was... at work today, I could tell if I did things right by whether or not I felt good after work. Did you have a good day at work? And she kind of smiled and she's like, yeah, I think it went well. And less than 24 hours, I had one of the best surgeons in the country like telling me that, yeah, I did a damn good job on your kid.
And
he has a badass scar on the back of his head.
No, we were just talking to Sam. Sam's got one too.
Yeah.
Saying,
And forever, I'm like, he doesn't know. Oh, when he was in surgery, there were some complications. His hand started to swell, and they had to make some relief cuts.
Okay.
It was traumatic at the time. Now he just has these cool scars that look like Wolverine.
Yeah.
So he went back and told all of his kindergarten friends. He has no idea about the brain tumor because it was in and out, and his hand he could see.
Mm-hmm.
So he told all of his friends that he went to get his claws removed.
Oh, that's so cute.
Because he had like Wolverine claws. And I'm like, that's badass, dude.
That is so badass.
So yeah, I told him, you're already tougher than half the kids in your class. And I have a solid excuse why he can't play football or contact sports.
There you go.
So I'm like, all right, we got our little mom liner right there.
And if he does, how badass is he if he does, does end up
playing? His brain can extra slosh.
Yeah, you'd be like, just
he's extra
out.
Protected from CTE. It's just,
he's got extra liquid in there. Yeah.
There's like a Simpsons episode where like Homer's got like a cushion of liquid around his brain so he can just take punches and doesn't get knocked out because like his brain is just like, there's a helmet inside.
Oh, he could take a punch because his room is dirty and I...
So, okay, I'm going to knock on all the wood. Has everything been okay since last August? Like, well, okay, so something else happened.
Oh, yeah, everything's
yeah,
so okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that was August, and 2 weeks ago, I got attacked by my neighbor's pit bull. Yeah, it jumped out their window and turned and came at me up my driveway. We had to fight it off. I had a weed eater going and everything, and then, yeah. Like, there's not, yeah, but... Again, being lucky in the only the worst ways, it just bit the tip of my finger. Mm-hmm. So
what were you, like, you said your dog, was your dog came out too, or was your dog already outside? And it was like you and the dog were...
Yeah, eventually, this dog and I had it out. My neighbors just moved in like 3 months ago, okay. And the day they moved in, their pit bull got half under my fence and attacked my dog. And so I kind of assisted it back on its property with my boot, and... had some choice words. I yelled. I didn't say it to the neighbor. I passive aggressively yelled at my wife that if that dog gets on my property again, I'll shoot it in the face. Because mm-hmm. I was a Marine and I was angry at this stupid dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so 3 months of this dog and I just not getting along. It was barked at my fence all the time. It was always mad at me. We always argued. And 2 weeks ago, I was finally weed eating along the fence line because the dog was inside the house mm-hmm. and I was
felt
safe.
Like you were safe. Yeah.
And out of the corner of my eye, I figured I like to get high when I mow the yard. So
yeah,
I'm
makes
like,
the, oh my God, yard work. I get either drunk or high all the time, or housework. It just makes it go by so much faster.
So I'm out there just like bobbing my head to my headphones, just like weed eating in my own zone. And I see like this white flash out of the corner of my eye. And you're like, dude, what if that was the dog jumping out the window? And then you look, you're like, dude, the fucking dog jumped out the window.
Was the screen in?
Yeah, it jumped through the screen. It broke the screen out and everything. And
it's
then
like, alpha male fight. He was just like, nope.
So then he just ran up to you and started what, trying to bite at you?
Well, or? It ran at me and I just like, I used to be the, I was the bite bitch for a police department.
What is that? Oh my God.
I used to put the suit on and wear the arms and I would fight. Yeah. I would just like,
do you really think that was the best job for you to have? No, I'm kidding.
No, honestly, it was sick.
Cool
it was fun.
It's so cool.
Like it?
Oh, I loved it. It was so fun. And like, there's always a part of you like, all right, I have to remember like when I'm running from the cops, how do I beat the dog?
I'm going to use this.
There's nothing altruistic about it. I wasn't like, oh, this is so they can get the bad guys.
No, I just thought maybe it'd be like something fucking cool to tell your friends.
No, it was so fun. Like the adrenaline rush of like running from something that could kill you.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
It's a rush.
So
you
have to run away from them?
Yeah, you have to. And like they would tell you like the dogs are trained that, all right, they took you to the ground and you would lay there and they'd sit next to you. And then they go, get up and run. And they're trained to like immediately tear you down.
Okay.
And I would try to devise ways like, all right, it has my arm, but you have like 9 inches of Kevlar padding on. So it never really like, it would bruise you, but not like.
Wow. So even with that much Kevlar, it can bruise you.
Oh, yeah. And so I'd be like, all right, if I lift it up, it has no legs on the ground. Mm-hmm. I'm stronger. It would still rip you down. But I'm not like scared to fight a dog.
Sure.
From that. And it may be like incorrect because I just had a tank top and shorts on.
Right.
And, so when the dog like came at me, I was still like calm and level headed. And I'm like, all right, I need to fend this critter off.
This critter.
And, I had the weed eater going. So yeah. I just like turned it to it. I'm like, man, we were doing this stupid dance for like, it seemed like 10 minutes of me just like, go away with the weed eater. And it never stopped. And, we kind of like, I don't know, danced around until it calmed down just enough that I could shut the weed eater off and look at it. And I went to like grab its collar. And as soon as we made like a gesture, because I'm like, all right, I could take it home now. Like, you know, dog, like it's antsy, but I'm an alpha male too.
Yeah,
we'll stare at each other. Right then, the dog's owner comes running around one corner. My old lady comes around the other. All my two kids, their two kids come running up to my back fence and open the gate. And my dog comes running out. Now, she wasn't fighting. My dog is the worst dog in the world.
What is it?
It is a lab mixed with lazy. And she's never fetched a ball. She hates water. In the summer, she goes from black to light brown because all she does is lay out
in the
tan.
Sun.
Yeah.
Aww.
I'm the worst dog in the world. When she comes out, and she just goes to like make friends because the dog's out. And then as soon as it snipped, she turned into straight gangster. She had like this razor back. And me and her, as soon as the dog went for her, I had the weed eater off and bare hands. I went to like push, punch, make distance between the dog and it. It got my hand. It went through the tip of my finger. It tore the meat off the tip. Just the tip, though. And then the fingernail, and it broke the bone. But so I cut that. And then, well, my hand was out of commission, so my dog was fighting. And then I was using some Vans to make distance. So we just kind of kicked and punched and fought until
the dumbass neighbors came out.
Well, no, she was just standing there like yelling.
What?
Like, yeah, like
wait. Oh yeah, you said she came
just out. Yelling. Stop! Stop! My fucking wife. God damn it. I have two hoses right there.
Uh-huh.
I had one with a pressure nozzle and one with a long hose that I had on the slip and slide in
the back. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she turns the water on and gets the pressure nozzle. Nothing comes out. And the other hose, it's going through 100 feet of hose and just pissing out. So she's, like, splashing the dog.
Oh, my God.
And I'm yelling, like, get away. And it's just all of us yelling. And finally, like, the pit bull let go of my dog long enough that I used my foot to shoo my dog away.
Yeah. Is your dog okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She got a couple bite marks on her back, but
she's fine.
Yeah, she's fine. Yeah, we had like a bonding experience that night. I'm all laying on the couch. I'm like, we went to battle, girl. I started quoting like old Marine shit, like, he who sheds blood on the battlefield shall always be my brother. Like 3 a.m, just on like painkillers with my dog. Like, we did it, girl.
you are good for something.
Oh my God.
I'm like, you never fetched a ball, but you're the shit now. Yeah.
No, yeah, she gets a medal. Got street cred.
Yeah, I'm like, you and me fought a pit bull. I'm all selling it up. I'm like, we could fight in the ring now. Like, you want to go on tour? And then the neighbor was able to kind of yell at that dog because pits. I don't like. All my reports I wrote up, I wrote the dog.
Because you didn't want it to be...
I didn't want a label. Yeah. I know too many good pits and too many good people.
It has everything to do with how shitty the owners are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're good. They're nanny dogs. They're made to protect your family.
Yeah.
No one will ever get in that house and mess with that family, I guarantee you. However, they shouldn't be out there pissed off at us.
Mm.
So when the owner did yell finally, and after, I mean, it was a good couple minutes of kicking around and fighting off, and you make distance one time and one of the dogs would come back or something would happen, and finally enough time went by and the dog settled down enough to where the owner can get it to calm. And all the kids were there, and I actually just walked in, grabbed a book, headphones, a bottle of water, and a hoodie, and said, I'll see you later, I'm going to the emergency room.
Oh, wow.
I just kind of knew what was up.
Like, yeah,
they knew me at the emergency room this time.
Of course they did.
It's like Norm walking.
What is it now?
Yeah.
No, we didn't know each other by name. Yeah, I wasn't like Tim Taylor in Home Improvement like level, but they definitely recognized me and carried on conversations from previous encounters.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And since it was just my finger, they would come in. I was there for like 4 hours, and they kept coming in like, we're going to get to you. We just had an ambulance roll up. I'm like, oh, my finger is bleeding. Go deal with that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So we spent hours together. They were just laughing.
So what ended up happening with your finger?
It ripped the tip off. I thought I was going to have... I've never had stitches.
Wow!
Yeah. I've never had stitches.
That's ironic.
Yeah, I've been ripped open. I've had, like, major surgeries, and they just always glued it or did something better. I'm like, to this, I've had casts, broken bones. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Never had a stitch.
That's crazy.
But they just, like, stuck the meat back on.
Did you have the meat with you, or was it still
attached? No, it was, like, it's almost, like, hinged on one side. Okay. The fingernails broke off, and... like, just enough of the nail is still attached that it held meat there. So they just, like, slid it back on, and now it's grown back, and it kind of looks like a circumcised penis. So
right now you have, like, a giant splint on it?
I have a giant splint.
Yeah.
And I hosted at the Funny Stop this weekend, and I was, like, excited. Like, yeah, put your right shirt on. You know, you do your hair, and
go
and, like, just have this giant bandage just standing right off the microphone. But,
well, and I can't, like, how the hell do you button and zip shit? Is it okay? Like, do you figure it out without an index
finger? Yeah, I've learned to use the left hand now. My solo sex life is ruined. I keep cutting myself.
I bet your wife's a big fan of you right now.
Well, yeah. Well, we figure when it heals and it looks right.
Well, I mean, even with that giant split on it, you could do some damage with that right now. Just getting finger blasted. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Spell that one out.
Yeah.
All right. So 2 weeks have gone by, and far everything's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems kind of beneficial that your life is chaotic from a perspective of a stand-up comic, just because it gives you really fucking good stories.
Yeah, that too, and it keeps life exciting.
When did you decide you're going to start doing comedy?
It was St. Patrick's Day last year.
Okay, it's just over a year.
Yeah, just over a year ago. It was actually my 10-year anniversary being home from Iraq I saw I got like a Facebook ad for a stand-up comedy class.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I've always loved comedy. I don't know music for anything. You heard a Logic song earlier. I shook my head and went, that's a great lyric, because I don't know.
I don't know Logic.
Any new music? And it's not even just that.
She knows the shit
out
of music, yeah.
Oh, I love it when people, you have to tell me music. I never find it. I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. I listen to all like 70s rock, and my son's name is Cash. It's all like old outlaw country. And, it was always stand up for me. So I thought if I could do comedy for 5 minutes, it was like a 3-week course, and at the end you get to do 5 minutes at the improv. I was like,
yeah, I did that one. Dave Swenson. Okay, yeah, that's Dave how Swenson. I got started too. Yeah,
So my life goal was all about doing new things. And if I could do 5 minutes of stand-up comedy, just say for the rest of my life I was a comic for 5 minutes, I would do it.
Yeah.
Well, I did that. And if you have the most people show up, you have to come back and do another set.
That was me too. Yep.
So then I'm like, well, crap, I can't sit out 3 months and then try it again. So I'll do another show. Well, I went to the Funny Stop, one of the best clubs in Ohio. And, for an amateur night, and you get moved forward. I happened to make it on to the next night. I brought like 10 people.
Yeah.
And brought like 10 people and came out. And so I'm like, well, this keeps going. Let's keep doing it. And I started hanging out. And honestly, it was just an excuse to get drunk and hang out with funny people on weeknights.
Yeah.
It was just a blast over the summer. And then when my son got the tumor, what I did is every night in the hospital, I just like, I've got really dark gallows humor to get through everything. Sure. And I just started writing all that shit down. And I would actually go to open mics while he was still in the hospital and just talk shit about it and say what I had to say. And that was when I really realized that this, I need this. This is how therapy. You heal. This is what you do. No one else really cares to hear about the tumor stuff all the time. Maybe you could write a joke here and there. But like, it really,
I don't know how much comedy, like, you study or history or if you know.
Oh, that's all I watch and listen to.
So, like, Tig Notaro did an entire, hour-long set about, I just found out I have breast cancer. My mom died, like, 3 weeks ago. My girlfriend broke up with me, like, a month ago. Just all the horrible shit.
Mm-hmm.
She hadn't written anything. She just went up and talked for a solid hour about it. And it was one of the best stand-up.
I haven't heard of that.
Was that recent one?
No. It's called Tig Notaro, and if you look at it, it looks like it says Tig Notaro Live, but it's Tig Notaro Live because like she just found out that she had breast cancer.
No,
this is probably 3 years ago. It's how she broke, really. I mean, like people, she was pretty well known at the time, but like I found out about her through this thing. Louis C.K. was there, and like he wrote her up, and I think that was the thing that caused like just sort of the influx of all the attention from that. Was literally like she went on stage, and everyone's still applauding. And like, you know, I mean, she was at, Largo in LA, which is like a pretty well-known, like, and it's a pretty big venue. So again, she wasn't well-known at that point, but I think that's officially what broke her into like superstardom.
For 15 years to become an overnight success.
She goes on. Yeah, exactly. She goes on stage and everyone's still applauding. She's like, thank you. Thank you. I have cancer. Thank you. I have cancer. And like, she just kept saying that. And then like, all of a sudden the audience just kind of was like, hairball.
Brutus is
hairball.
Hacking up
a hairball right now. Chaos. Awesome. It's happening. This is the first time he's ever copped up a hairball.
Right in front of you,
too. This guy hates dogs. I'm going to be his friend
now. What are you doing, friend? Is he okay?
I think so.
Hairball for now.
No, but then like, the audience.
This is a really hairy cat. There's no way he doesn't do this all the time.
He's like such a big hairy cat.
It's like 80 and human right now.
People were like, they didn't know how to react because they were just like,
that's how no one knows
And then she literally was like, so I just found out I have breast cancer like 2 days ago. And she's like, but that's not all. And then she started talking about how like, she's like, my mom died randomly like 3 weeks ago. It was completely unexpected. She fell and like broke her neck and died.
Oh, wow.
She's like, but then she's like, 3 weeks before that, like my long-term relationship ended. Like, and then she was making a joke about...
Is that the woman she had kids with or a kid adopted?
She might have kids. I didn't know if she even had kids. But she was like, and everyone would come up to me and be like, God only gives you what you can handle.
Oh,
like,
I hear that.
And I just want to picture God up there after my mom. After my mom died, after my girlfriend breaks up with me, my mom dies, and he goes, you know what? She can take a little more. And all the angels are like, God, what are you doing? He's like, no, I think she can handle this. Like,
that's so perfect.
And she literally came up with all this shit in like 2 days. So I think there's definitely a way that you can talk about it.
Oh, I definitely
make it hysterical.
That is something I really It's my me set. I call it my grenade because I don't like to do it on other people's shows. Yeah. I like to do it when the time's right, because you drop it out there and it silences everyone. But it's the one probably comedy bit so far that I'm really proud of, mm-hmm. because I can bring the audience back on that bit, talking about myself and him. Mm-hmm. It's the only funny set I think I have, and it's the only one I don't do.
Well, okay, so to your point, you're talking about you don't like to do it on other people's shows. You have shows. You guys run shows, you and your brother.
My brother doesn't do shit.
Okay.
But show up and get his name in the lights.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah, I talked him into doing comedy. He's funnier than me. Everyone likes him more than me. Yeah.
Well, what's funny is everyone always gets you too confused, too. Yeah. Like, everyone's telling you had a good set. You're like, I didn't go up tonight. What are you doing?
No,
like,
yeah.
Do you guys look that much alike?
No. I don't think so.
I mean, he's shorter,
he's buff, he's handsome, he's darker.
He doesn't wear glasses.
He doesn't wear glasses. He doesn't look like a nerd. So
I think it's funny. So you have a Thursday night open mic.
Yes, every Thursday at Garage Bar I do an open mic.
And Willoughby.
We're in Lake County. So I know it's a bit of a haul to get comics out there. We do get a handful of good ones every night.
You do.
And I do want to put it out there for any comics listening. I know it's a drive to get out there, but I offer more stage time. Like, you can go kind of as long as you want. So I know you put the time and effort
to get
out there.
It's a cool space. They have good food, amazing beer selection. They have games all over the place, which are super fun. Yeah. And I appreciate, though, that, like, you do this in a room with full of games. People could just be fucking playing pool or Pac-Man.
Oh, that's for the showcase.
Okay, and that's on Saturdays. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. I've done the showcase.
All the games and everything off down there. Yeah, I do. The first time I went down there, I had Bill Squire out there for my first big premiere, and they totally, like, shit the bed on that one. They didn't show me how to work the lights. They left the TVs on, so it was bad. But since then, the bar, honestly, it's the same owner that owns a lot of the bars in Willoughby. Frank and Tony's is a pretty popular place, all those. And he's really trying to push kind of the comedy and art scene in Willoughby.
I think it's impressive as fuck, though. You've only been doing this a year and a half, and you've got two shows.
14 months.
14 months. Almost. Yeah, not even that. Months. So you're running two shows, which is a lot more than a lot of people do.
That's because I invite chaos, too.
Yeah.
It was an opportunity that arose. It's 5 minutes from my house, and I was like, let's get in that pinball machine and see where it takes us. It's a lot of work.
It is. Oh, you're preaching to the choir.
Oh, yeah. I know you run three or four.
I specifically run two, and then Spider actually handed off the two other shows that SX1 has to Elizabeth Seaman. So she started running those. And then I have the podcast. And
Spider Jones is awesome.
He's great.
I got to spend his birthday with him.
Oh, that's nice. Were you at Funny Stop?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was filming himself doing shots of 151, which I was like, this is rare for him, Spider shit right here. Because he usually doesn't even really drink that much.
He's such an awesome guy with his birthday. Yeah, it was a good time with him.
Well, it's funny, too, because he's such an old grump. And, like, he actually came into my office. So, kind of.
I saw him smile for hours straight.
Know.
I felt so weird. I'm like, this is awesome.
So, here's the other thing. Like, he to kind of relevant to the subject we're talking about today, he came into my office because we work together.
And he's another one that's lived through chaos.
And he came into my office on Friday, which was his birthday, and he was like, something bad's gonna happen today. And I was like, why is it? Because something bad always happens. He's like, I've been electrocuted on my birthday. I've been like, he had I got in a fight. I got punched. I broke an arm. Like, he had all the shit that happened
over
on
it. It
his
bad.
Birthday. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. All right. Officially.
The hairball cat just jumped chaos. On the table and ruined
chaos.
Everything.
This has never happened.
It's chaos
never
kitty.
Happened. What the hell, Brutus?
There's a cat just jumped up and ate
flying.
Cheese.
That is some hairy cheese.
Sharp knife.
And she just put the cheese and knife back on the tray. We're definitely going
to
eat this later.
I don't want him to step on the knife. The cat just jumped on the table on a cheese plate, which has never happened. And there was a sharp knife. And I don't
for how long have we been doing this? Brutus has
never
even attempted to jump onto
real.
The table.
This is a real thing, you guys. This is totally real.
He must be like, oh, it's the animals. They're just attacking now.
Oh, my God.
Maybe it's me.
That's what I'm saying. This
he's
is
picking
a real
up
thing.
Your vibes.
He's picking up the chaos. Holy shit, guys. Wow. This is a real thing.
Yeah, I tried spitting the fur ball on his foot. Now I'm jumping his face.
He scratched me because I went to pick him up. And he scratched. I mean, not that it's his fault. He was just kicking because there was
Brutus is in rare form right now.
This cat's bigger than most small dogs.
That was insane. Okay, so anyway. Speaking of this, before we all die, I want to thank our guest Gary Graham. Hey, can anybody find you on social media at all?
Yeah, I have it out there.
Yeah,
I should have wrote that. Just, I'd like to point out, I wrote a bunch of notes you about did. Funny chaos things.
Did you and use then, any of them?
No, I just talked no. about myself the whole time.
Well, I wanted to hear about yourself. That was the point.
Yeah, I kind of had life theories about chaos and how lightning goes, but whatever.
Dude, that sounds cool as shit. We need to have you back on
yeah,
so we can talk about that.
Next episode.
Yeah. Social media.
Social media. On Instagram, I'm the Gary Graham, okay. like the Ohio State. And on Facebook, I'm just Gary Graham.
Okay. Geege, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Facebook, Hannah Grace Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, or Instagram, ggchick, g.g.chick.
You can find me at EpicFaul, E-P-I-C-F-A-U-L, on Twitter and Instagram. I want to thank Pete Milk for doing our recording and production, and Above Below Entertainment for being our network. Okay, love you, bye.